an AppleViz original.
But basically, it's a guide. I ran into people over the years who had iPhones. They'd gotten iPhones or iPads later on, and they just didn't really comprehend what they had. Like, they didn't know much about VoiceOver, if they even knew about it at all. It really weighs on you towards the end of it. I've been working on it for 3.5 years, and you worry about, what have I forgotten? What if I not remember to include that I was going to? All those kind of things just weigh on you and drag at you after a while, and you start being paranoid that you've forgotten something. It gets torturous towards the end. It's been quite a journey, you know, doing this guide, and it's certainly, I had no idea I was going to spend 3.5 years on it.
Hello and welcome to the AppleViz Extra. My name is Dave Nason, and I am delighted to be joined today by the author of a great new guide, or book indeed, called Personal Power, the iOS edition. It is Michael Fair. Thank you for joining me, Michael. How are you today?
Oh, it's a pleasure. Yeah, I'm doing pretty well today. It's nice not to have a massive project looming over your head needing to be done.
I can imagine the weight off your shoulders when you pressed publish that in the end. All right.
Yeah, it really weighs on you towards the end of it. I've been working on it for 3.5 years, and you worry about, what have I forgotten? What if I not remember to include that I was going to? All those kind of things just weigh on you and drag at you after a while, and you start being paranoid that you've forgotten something. It gets torturous towards the end.
I can only imagine. And for those who don't know, who haven't seen it yet or heard of it yet, what is Personal Power, the iOS edition?
Well, basically, it's a guide. I ran into people over the years who had iPhones. They'd gotten iPhones or iPads later on, and they just didn't really comprehend what they had. Like, they didn't know much about VoiceOver, if they even knew about it at all. A lot of people were given these things by sighted folks who thought that Siri was what made it accessible. Mm-hmm. And so they were trying to do everything with Siri. And of course, that's not what Siri is all about. Siri is a digital assistant. It's not an accessibility tool. So, you know, there comes a point when you can't. You ask, you know, tell me about aardvarks. If you're lucky, it will come back with something small about aardvarks. If you're not lucky, it'll say, I found this on the web. Check it out. And
yes,
you are stuck high and dry if you don't have VoiceOver. So I wanted to make sure that people, if they had one of these devices or they were interested in it, then they had something that took them right from day one, from getting the device to where they could hopefully get it set up by themselves, connect, branch out online, and have a good idea of how to use VoiceOver and how to use their device. And the other piece of this was, of course, the apps. You know, it's great once you master your device, it's wonderful, but then what apps are accessible? There are millions in the App Store. Only a small fraction of those millions are accessible. And that's still a humongous range of apps. But if you keep running into ones that aren't accessible, you're going to get all discouraged and bitter, and you're not going to be as nice a community member. And, you know, we've had developers, you know, basically fold, you know, and just turn to other things because of too many complaints from people who just don't understand, you know, how hard it is to do what they do. So I figured there's got to be a way to really change the equation here, to really, you know, explain enough to people so that they know what they have and they can go forward and be and thrive in the iOS ecosystem.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a huge guide, isn't it? Like, you've really gone from the very start. Like you said,
it's 249,000 words. I predicted 250, and I was very close. I really thought it'd be over that, honestly. But in some cases, it was the sections that I didn't expand quite as much ultimately, and others it was just, you know, editing choices I made to smooth it out. So
it's a million and one decisions as you go through a process like that.
Geez, yeah, and literally probably twice as many words. Like, so much of this had to be rewritten over those 3 years. We've had a number of iOS updates. We had you know, apps, wonderful apps have disappeared from the App Store that I had planned to feature that then, of course, I'm not going to give you a bunch of apps that don't exist anymore, right? So you got to take them out and find alternatives. And very, very frustrating process.
Yeah. And I'd be interested to know, when somebody produces something like this, I'm always interested to know their background, how they actually got here. Are you a long-time user of assistive technology yourself? Or
I got my first computer when I was 10 years old, and it was an Apple IIe. And I used to play games on it. That was really what started me learning about computers. Was my teacher gave me this disc with games on it, and I started learning how to type. And by the time I got to typing class in school in the later grades, I had all kinds of time to goof off because I already knew how to type. I learned to play text adventures, and that really stuck with me. And so all through school from 10 onward, I had a computer, and I saw access technology grow up as I did, really. I got a Eureka A4 after a while and used that. And that was my first time when I really gained a bit of notoriety. I had a friend who let me access his BBS account at the time, and I was able to find a bunch of games for the Eureka and get them and pass them around and write a couple articles for the newsletter, Archimedes, which Robotron had for those units. And then they went away, unfortunately. I missed that little contraption. Then I was a DOS and then a Windows user. And during the DOS days in 96 of July, I started Odyssey magazine. That was basically all about computer games accessible to the blind. I edited that for about 4 years, about 40 issues, and eventually handed that off to someone else. And they did another 11 before it finally just collapsed. But that was spread me around. That's probably what I'm still most known for all these years later, because that was the only magazine at the time that was covering accessible games for the blind. So it was circulated quite widely. And then after that, I tried to make a game, find out how very difficult that is, and eventually had to concede that I couldn't really do it. Try to write a collection of short stories. In a couple attempts at that, and I got my first iPhone in this in 2011. Mom had dropped her phone and it had broken, and she needed a replacement. And I had one that I had bought in a real hurry because I needed something to let people in my apartment. If you're in an apartment, you have to use your phone to buzz them in. And I get everything delivered like online, right? So you need to be able to do that. A phone is pretty essential at that point. So I got this Doro phone. It was basically designed for people who didn't want a smartphone. It had raised buttons, and that was its big attraction. There are a lot of features on that phone I couldn't use, but I could dial with it. So that was its one and only virtue. At that time, I started hearing about this iPhone, and I heard these people say, "Oh man, it's amazing! You can use a touchscreen, you can do all kinds of things on it." And I remember laughing at them, like, "Yeah, right! You can't do that. That's nuts! On a flat screen device, you can't feel what you're doing, because traditionally anything blind people would use must have tactile buttons."
Yeah, the tactile is so key.
Yeah, I remember laughing at some of these people. Why are you wasting your money on this? And then I started hearing it more. Oh, you should check out this app. We're doing this and that and the other thing. All kinds of outrageous things. And I finally just started really looking into it a bit more seriously. And by the time, this would have been about a year before Mom dropped her phone. By the time that happened, and I was ready to get another phone and let her use the Doro. The iPhone with no buttons was what was seeming like the no-brainer option to get and jump on board. And I prepared a bit for this. I found you guys on Apple This. I mean, that was up and running, and I was very grateful for that. And I loved the pioneering spirit of it. It seemed like every day almost there was some new excited app discovery or message about some new technique or some discovery about what it could do with it. And I thought, I went in on this. And so walked in with my father, and we got a salesman. We bought our first iPhone. And I remember feeling that And I guess decided people, maybe they look kind of fancy or swirly or something. My first thought was, okay, this feels like one of those drinks coasters where if you put it down wrong, your glass goes flying. You know, that was my first thought.
Yeah, and the iPhone 4 was that kind of...
It was
almost a square, like not quite a square, and glass, and flat.
It was weird. It was exactly as described, but I just didn't quite believe that it could be that plain feeling. and then it was, and it, you know, and so then we started setting it up. The salesman, got it, the carrier stuff set up. I went with a phone carrier, and handed me this phone, and we got it talking, and Dad understood that it had a screensaver on a screen reader, that it would start talking. But I don't think the salesman realized that. I don't know what he thought, whether Dad would be there to sort of help me do everything on it or what. But it kind of blew his mind a bit. But we got it talking, and it started behaving. And within the first hour of using it, I was at the point of saying, okay, I can master this. It's going to take a bit, but I can do this. And that was kind of the start. And, by the end of the week, I was getting apps. I was, checking the weather. I was doing all the things, starting to gain a bit more proficiency, not hanging up on as many people that tried to call me. that was how it started. And then at that point, over time, of course, it started growing, and you started seeing things like the camera being more and more useful, and GPS apps started appearing, different things, games, more and more games. That was really attractive to me. I've been a gamer since long before I created Odyssey. That was what started me computing. So, all of that was there. And then, as I began to really enjoy my iPhone, I started meeting these people, fairly infrequently at first, but it grew, that it didn't know what I knew, that didn't seem to know about voiceover, about the basic gestures, about the rotor, about all the different things.
It's so easy for that to happen. Like, because I know I didn't discover it through people originally. I know back in 2009, I maybe wasn't as involved with organizations and things like that, and I think I typed iPhone accessibility into YouTube one day just to see, is there anything there? And, oh, look, there is. And, the rest is history kind of thing. So you're absolutely right that, it's so easy for people. It's so easy for people to think, oh, well, everybody knows about that. But honestly, it's not the case.
And even big organizations that you'd think ought to, I found just weren't awake to the potential. Like, I remember the fellow who contacted me, he lived in Northern Ontario, and he was a volunteer that helped another blind lady up there named Joanne, who was a big inspiration for this guide. She was the final straw. I kept meeting people that didn't know what I thought they ought to really benefit the most from having their devices. And it began to be harder for me to just enjoy life, knowing that I was benefiting from this, and other people could too, if they just knew enough. And this guy called me, and he had seen something I'd written, just a comment on an app called KNFB Reader that was one of those mind-blowing apps that could read print in seconds. That would be really useful to help this lady read her community newsletters and things. And so they got me in touch, and I was able to talk with this lady and really discover that what she did, what she was able to figure out on her own, and then where that sort of stopped. And, so I was able to then figure out that, oh, wow, okay, this is yet another person who's done fairly well, but still just didn't know quite enough to start buying apps without help. Like, she had someone sighted helping her do things when she couldn't figure out, she'd have them help, buy apps. She tried to do most things with Siri. It was very kind of clunky. And I thought, no, this is wrong. Something has to be done about this. And so a few other pieces fell into place too. I had gone off with on a trip, a good friend of mine, Steve Rogaski, we were talking on about basically using these devices as computers, as a replacement laptop. If you had, you know, Bluetooth keyboard, if you're going to do any writing for any length of time, have a Bluetooth keyboard. It's just, yes, you know, almost an essential accessory, for a serious writer. And don't you dare try using Siri in a class situation. That's just not going to fly. So, I was happy to just go on this trip for a week without my laptop, which had gone everywhere with me prior to this sort of time frame, and I was completely content just to have what I had on my iPhone. I could write blog entries, I could answer emails, I could read books, I could do all that. I was reading the book called "But What If We're Wrong" by Chuck Klosterman, it looks at all the conclusions we come to, and what if we look at what we think of as certain now from the prospect of the future? Like, we look back and think of, oh my God, how could these people think the world was flat and the center of the universe, right? And we dismiss that. But what if one day in the future people look at something we take utterly for granted now with the same sort of derision as we look back on them? Like, how much do we really know? How much have we figured out, or how much is going to change as we learn more and upend what we think now? So that kind of put me in the frame of mind. Those three things kind of went click, and I just said, you know what, I've got to do something about this. I was in a unique position. I'm unemployed. I don't have a full-time job or anything. I do segments for a show called AMI, Kelly and Company. It's on AMI Audio, AMI.ca. And that's basically my only other income. And I thought, I've got all this time. I'm going to try and write something that will take someone from the beginning stages. If you just get the device and you don't know anyone, you don't have anyone to turn to, and try to make something that will help them learn what they need to connect, to get the thing set up, to get online, and to then tell them where they can go to find out more and what resources are out there, and start them to the point where they can start exploring for themselves and finding out what they want to do.
Yeah, I think it's brilliant. I think you haven't said it directly, but I think confidence is basically, giving people confidence is really what a huge part of it is, because you meet so many people, or certainly you would have met so many people who were using maybe Windows Mobile, I think would have been big on your side of the Atlantic, and Nokia phones over here, this side, with kind of with screen readers, but they had buttons, and people found it quite hard to let go of those, didn't they?
Yeah, and not only that, but even if you manage to figure out your device, then there's still which of the millions of apps are accessible. And if you run into, as a beginner, like I could, if my father decided to pick up gardening or fishing or something, he could find an app in very short order that would probably help him do a better job of that. It's not that easy for us. We have that barrier of, is this accessible? Is this going to be useful? And we have the situation where even things that look like they really ought to be accessible, word processors, text-based games that are statistic-based, not even time pressure involved, just choices and stats and text. You can find some of those that VoiceOver cannot let you access. And it's just mind-blowing. If you run into too many situations like that, you're going to stop looking. It's like, the nail that sticks up gets hammered down. You get hit too many times, you're not going to come back up. So how do we change the equation? How do we turn people from discouraged, bitter, this experience isn't what I thought it would be, to encouraged, to I've had enough positive experience that maybe this is worth trying out. Maybe this is worth a gamble, and let's see if this app might be accessible. Maybe the developer might be willing to do something, and to give people enough encouragement so they're willing to take those steps, to the willing to explore a bit, willing to contact developers of apps that interest them and go, hey, blind people would probably really like this. Could you make it accessible?
Do that often yourself.
Yes. And there are some interesting results. We've had Six Ages Ride Like the Wind. That's an amazing, my favorite game so far. Okay. It's as wonderfully playable and welcoming as it is, because the author encountered a blind person that said, hey, we would really like to play this. And their original game, King of Dragon Pass, was then made accessible. And now he's on this, he's a champion for accessibility. Dark Room is another one.
Yes.
In fact, you'll find a message in that game if you if you go far enough and win it, that is only there for blind players to find. There's all sorts of things popping up like that. Fantastical. Again, people contacted, yes. You know, and that is a wonderful app that is keeping me sane now that I've got all these interviews and things popping up, and it's a lot of things like that. So it seems to be an environment that if initiative is taken, it often pays off. Developers can implement changes that make their apps more accessible.
You're right around the championing as well. I've come across that a few times where somebody who just didn't know before, once they get that interest in it, once they realize A, there's people behind this feature, and B, it's actually quite interesting and a challenge maybe to kind of see, okay, how do I get this to a point where it's as good as possible for these people as well, for these users as well, and they become advocates themselves.
Yeah, and things like bigger organizations, now that there are laws in place to start, making sure that things are made accessibly. Banks, I never would have thought, that my bank app was accessible until I actually tried it out and found out that, yes, it was. The app for my ISP, my carrier, Rogers, is accessible. So, those things, sometimes you had to complain if that accessibility gets broken. But chances are it's going to be worked on and fixed. Like it's really getting to the point where that is starting to happen with more things. Mm-hmm. And we can encourage that. If we can get more educated, aware people using these devices and piping up when things aren't working, hopefully politely. That's the other piece of this with this guide. I wanted to educate people, to give them a sense of that it's not like flipping a switch. You can't, it's not that developers are so lazy that they just don't, flick a switch and turn the app accessible. There's effort involved. There's time involved. There's skill involved in doing this as well as it can be done, or just barely well enough to serve. And I wanted to engender a bit of less sort of acid. You get all the people complaining, and they're really, they come at it with, why don't you, everyone should just know enough to make this accessible, and you haven't, and you're just a bad person. And that's not going to get us very far. I wanted to change it, the tone of the complaints when they come in, to be polite ones. You get more with the carrot than you do with the stick, and I want to sort of make it to the point where the blind community isn't sort of getting all of its victories through lawsuits. I want it to be more. I want us to get there by reaching out, by asking rather than demanding. And if we can do that, then maybe over time, the holdouts will be surrounded by developers who have done it, have made their apps accessible, and they'll change their tunes.
And I think it's like you. You're right that it's a two-pronged thing, really, isn't it? Because if you have the legislation is great, and I think we need it. It helps push things forward. But those developers who really want to do it will do it better. Still, we don't want people doing the bare minimum. We want people doing a great job. And that's how building those relationships will make that happen.
Exactly. Yeah. And if I can help people learn how to use their devices and really thrive in the iOS ecosystem and understand what that entails, then they go in with reasonably set expectations and will get a more understanding attitude going forward, I think. So that's been another goal throughout the guide, is to really try to point out that these devices are not simple. They feel magically simple, but under that glass is millions upon millions of lines of code and parts and tech and all sorts of things that it blows the mind. You read some of these books like Brian Merchant's The One Device, and it just blows the mind, considering all the stuff that's involved. Yeah.
That one inaccessible button took somebody weeks. Sometimes you'll find out. But of course, it's massively frustrating when you do feedback and 2 years later, it's still not accessible. And I suppose that's where your strength in numbers comes into play as well, when you talk about trying to empower as many people as possible.
Yeah, exactly. And I wanted to really give people a sense, especially of the whole idea of the ecosystem, because I don't think blind people have really had to experience that directly before. Like as a part of Windows, like if something goes wrong with Windows, you're using another company's screen reader, and chances are that company is going to warn you that, you know, you don't want to upgrade yet, we're not ready, don't go to the next version of Windows until we're ready. And Microsoft actually was good enough to really warn people in advance, to give them, to extend the time that they were able to upgrade, you know, and they did all of this to make the transition as smooth as possible for people who needed accessibility. Meanwhile, Apple will not announce any difficulties until, oh, it's out, and oh, you're encouraged to update, and oh, all of a sudden my Braille doesn't work because I've updated to what should have been a better version. And now, you know, I can't make a phone call without then hanging up and losing speech and panicking because I'm a beginner and I don't know enough to know how to get out of the situation you just put me in. And, you know, what if I'm calling for a read, like I'm in danger or something and I need help, and all of a sudden I hang up and I don't have my iPhone anymore. You know, it just boggles the brain, some of the stuff that gets through. And people have to understand that we're part of a bigger picture now. I'm not saying that they shouldn't pay more attention to accessibility. I'm saying they absolutely should. But we have to also realize it's one of many competing interests that keep this ship floating. And, you know, even for sighted people, there have been some hideous stuff that has come through that turns your new iPad into a brick.
iOS 13 was not popular among people.
It's not just us at all. Yeah, it's there are lots of bugs, and there have been even more serious ones in earlier iterations. So, you know, there are two extremes. People can say, oh, you know, we're not worth it. You know, Apple doesn't care about accessibility. They just let this stuff go. Well, no, that's not true.
That frustrates me when I read that. I have to admit, because I've never subscribed to the Apple don't care thing. I think it's really clear that they care an awful lot. I just think they don't get everything right because they're
exactly
company.
It's a big, huge endeavor with probably no one alive understanding the complete how the thing works. So it's the left hand not quite knowing what the right is doing. It's not intentional. Apple does not want you to not use your Braille display with its product. It's not the goal. It's an unintended side effect of a bunch of competing interests colliding. And that's, I think, what we have to get our heads around, so that we can then complain rightly when stuff goes wrong, but do so with a level of understanding that enables us to really be better advocates and end up creating allies who will watch out for this sort of thing and not let stuff out the door that isn't as ready as it could be. And I think, you know, Apple has learned, you know, from this iOS 13, like from what I've heard about what they've changed, it sounds like they have taken this to heart and are really, they've implemented a lot of new procedures to make sure that iOS 14 is a lot smoother. Kind of like Star Trek movies. You know, we have, you know, even Star Trek movies are better on average. There's maybe one, I think 9 is the one, you know, oddball that was actually quite good, I thought. But, you know, the Wrath of Khan, you know, Voyage Home, Undiscovered Country, First Contact, and Nemesis was kind of a downer for ending it all. But on average, you know, the even ones are better. I think iOS is kind of falling into a pattern like that. You know,
TikTok, I suppose people call it, don't they? Kind of TikTok development, where you make a leap forward, but it's maybe a bit buggier, and then the next year you sort of...
Yeah, you reach a little too high.
Even the iPhone 4 and the 4S, the 5, the 5S, there was a bit of that.
Yeah, and then you correct and you solidify what you've got. And I think Apple has kind of fallen into that pattern a bit. And hopefully we'll see iOS 14 is hopefully going to fix a lot of this. And we'll have a much smoother ride going forward from that point. But but I wanted people to... you know, to have something that helped them get oriented, to help them, you know, really understand what was possible, have a really good idea of the range of possibilities that you could do with an iOS device, and sort of what was included, what you then would go out to the App Store to find, how that App Store works, how the various pieces of iOS and VoiceOver, especially, big section on VoiceOver in the guide, and and just aspects of life. Like, there's the basics, there's the ecosystem, the basics, and then I get into different aspects of everyday life, of productivity, of games, of lifestyle apps, which is a category I kind of came up with.
Would you say then, because we're very, in many ways, we of course we've got a lot of these of beginners, but we also have a very tech savvy community as well. There's a lot of people in the community who are very technical as well. Is there something in this guide for everybody? Would you say?
I would say yes. I hope so. What I've tried to do is include different things. For example, in the different sections, in the productivity section, in the game section, in the lifestyle app section, I try to cover as a lot of the different third-party apps, and also, of course, what's included on your device from the word go, and sort of give you a range. It's not so much that I want to tell you how to do everything, as I want to make people aware of the basic skills that apply pretty much everywhere, and then what you can do if you decide to go exploring and you know, broaden your horizons a bit, try new apps, maybe get into internet radio. Like, so even if you might know all the things I cover in terms of VoiceOver, in terms of iOS, the basics, the skills, there's probably something in the app selection that I cover. There's probably something in the list of games, the list of podcasts, the different things like that, the internet radio stations. There'll hopefully be something in the middle of that guide that is of interest to an expert that they might not have thought of before. But I, of course, my focus is mainly on the beginners and just showing people all the different possibilities that you could do, and just give them a sense of the range and the scope so that they could then explore competently for themselves and have a better experience.
And I think it's great to have recommendations for apps and things that aren't just, because I think even if you go to maybe some organizations, or even if you found somebody in a carrier shop or something and ask them about accessibility, they will probably direct you to maybe Blind Square, and they'll direct you to KNFB Reader, but they might not know about the regular mainstream apps that are also very accessible.
Yeah, and then there's like Prismo 5 is brilliant. Like, that is a wonderful alternative reading app. And then, of course, there's VoiceDream Scanner that just blew brilliant, my mind with its simplicity. I mean, that was amazing. But that was the other side of it, too, is how to get people using the device for more. And that's why I have the camera section very early on, right after I talk about the App Store, pretty much. I talk about, you know, the camera apps, because that is one, I always try to look for something to really engage the beginner, because that's the base. A lot of these books will tell you how to do stuff. You know, there's the manual's there. You can get the manual and learn how to take a picture, how to, you know, do various things. But what blind people need is something like this, something as alien as trying to use a flat screen device with no buttons, is the answer to the question why you want to bother. Like, why would you spend money on something like this? What is the draw? So I explain about, like the economic draw. You know, this, if you get on the iOS ecosystem, you are now, economics start working for you. You have a device that has a GPS, has a camera that can identify objects, that can read print, that can do all manner of things. You have a stereo sound capability. You can have it. It can be your stereo. It can be your TV. You know, especially if you're blind and you don't have to look at a screen anyway, right? I mean, you know, there are so many things. You can be your mall. You can shop online. Yeah. You can order in. There's so many different uses for this thing, and it's if you had to buy all these devices separately. Like, I had my first GPS. It was a Trekker Breeze, and it was an awesome little thing. But it was like $800 on its own. Something like that. Whereas as this, you get an app like Blind Square, it maybe costs maybe $50, I think, 54 Canadian. It was something like that. And it was like, that was, you know, even something as expensive as KNFB Reader was. I mean, that was the most expensive app.
Oh, at the time, yeah.
I had a philanthropist actually help with the funds to get that. And it just blew my mind. And, you know, but you'd pay, you know, on the Windows side, if you had K1000, which I did for years, I mean, the government paid near $1,000 or something for my initial license. I had to pay every time I wanted an update. It was like $100 and change because exchange rate, right? The US Canadian currency. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I mean, I paid once. One time it was like 100 and something for KNFB Reader, and it's all I've ever paid for it for years, right? Yeah. That kind of thing is huge economically. The screen reader is free. VoiceOver is built in. You don't have to pay for maintenance updates. You know, it's a lot of stuff that is used to cost a small fortune is now just part of the package for everybody. And that changes the game. And then there are things like books, where I have easily 2,500 plus books now. And I'm on a fixed income. Normally you can't do that sort of thing. But if you use your wish list and you add titles to it and you watch for sales, you can build up a pretty good library. Yeah. Over.
And even things like, a lot of people use things like Bookshare and these kind of services as well. There's even library yeah. services in some locations.
Yeah, there's the Dolphin
Mention, Kindle and Audible and everything on top of that. So
yeah, Kindle is brilliant. And that's a, you know, good example of, and I use Kindle actually to illustrate the whole Apple ethos of how they never restrict you. But they want you to use their stuff. So they kind of make friction in a few places, just slight mm-hmm. friction. You can get all your books right in the books app and auto audiobooks mm-hmm. too now. So for beginners, yeah. it's you start building up a library. And maybe by the time you've learned how to browse on Safari on the built-in browser, you're pretty happy with the books app and you're not going to go looking mm-hmm. for elsewhere. It's full of things like that. You can use Apple TV and or you can use Netflix, and nothing stops you from using Netflix. Mm. The app is wonderful. It's wonderfully accessible, you know, but you have to learn how to browse the web before you can go out and look for movies. Go to the Netflix site and subscribe to it there. Once you subscribe, then, of course, everything is is right built in on the app. Mm-hmm. But, and, you know, the Apple Music, you can use Spotify and tons of other services. But with Apple Music right there and it being so easy and you can just, you know, subscribe and not have to buy anything, it's, you know, it's really Apple sort of has you, nudges you, in effect, towards their services.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. It's a big part of their future plans, I think. And when you look at it, you know, just take a step back and look at all the apps on your phone. It's actually incredible, like,
yeah.
how many things you're doing with this one tiny device that fits in your pocket.
Exactly. I mean, it's just incredible now that, and you just need a few accessories and you're pretty much off to the races. And even at the equipment level, I mean, it's cheaper. I mean, if you break your keyboard on a laptop, you're sending that whole laptop away to get fixed. If you want to use its keyboard, you don't have a choice. Mm. You can get a third party keyboard, plug it in, but then you've got an extra device to lug around. So if you want that laptop and its keyboard back, you're doing without the whole laptop. If I want a new keyboard, I can just get a new keyboard for my iPhone. I can get new earpods if they break. I can, you know, all the components are more replaceable and you can pick your moments better. So again, if you're on low income, that can really help over the years because you can maximize, you know, because when you do have to upgrade your phone every 5 years or so, give or take, it's probably longer now given the changes to their scheduling with iOS and things, you can still use the same accessories on the next phone, the exception possibly being cases, you know, because they might fit properly. But everything else, you know, I still have a keyboard that I got two phones ago. Crazy, measuring life in phones, you know.
I know.
It happened six phones ago, I did this.
I know, it's crazy. And it's true, there's a lot of people for whom their phone is their primary computing device, ultimately. This is, you know, they don't even need a laptop anymore lot of people.
Yeah, it's exactly this how it is for me. My laptop is here and I have some wonderful games on it that I'd hate to lose. But other than that, I do everything on my phone now. And a Bluetooth keyboard, usually.
As a gamer then yourself, because you've mentioned games several times, how does iOS compare to the likes of Windows and so on. Like, are you, do you find it to be a good, you know, good environment with lots of choice, or is it frustrating that there isn't enough out there, or is there enough variety out there for you?
iOS has proved to be pretty interesting in that way. We have, on the one hand, the opportunity to make things accessible is a lot better because you have a known range of devices. It's different than Android that way, because in Android, you never know what you're going to be running on. You can have tons of different devices, whereas iOS is very limited. There's a limited scope of devices, and all of which can run the different things. And so developers just have to test within these devices. And not only that, but everything's included. Everyone has VoiceOver. So you can test. You don't have to worry about some limitation on your demo copy of JAWS or something. Mm. You can test everything out to make sure it's as accessible as it can be. So right across that board, the costs have dropped for potentially making games accessible. Now, there's still effort involved in doing it well. You can have something that's accessible but a pain in the neck to use. So that's one drawback. So there's still effort in thinking of ways, like, for example, in Six Ages, there's a map that you have to explore. And he's come up with a wonderful way, A-Sharp software, Dave Dunham is the developer's name. They came up with a wonderful way of making that app, the map is, you don't even have to bother with the map. There's an exploration method that's so much easier than trying to struggle to comprehend a big, huge, sprawling map. And he put that in just for blind people. So that is a welcoming move. That is something that says, you are welcome here. I want you as my customers, right? And descriptions there, if you go past the options in that game, there are descriptions of the art. There are hand-drawn art pieces all through the game, and they're described. The scenes are described for us, and no one else can see that text. It's just there for blind people. So, you know, there are ways to really do it well. And more developers are kind of taking the time to really understand how the feature works, how VoiceOver works, and really excel at that.
You seeing improvement then? So, you know, there was a time maybe where all we had really were basic puzzle games or card games and fairly basic audio games.
Do you think we're
moving beyond that?
I'm seeing more possibilities proven. I think there's a lot of areas that still have to be. For example, I think we could have a really good side-scroller game. I can't comprehend why no one's taken a crack at that yet. We've had 3D audio adventures. Part of my guide, I was talking about Papa Sangre 2, Audio Defense, all those games from something else that are now gone from the App Store.
Yeah, those were huge.
Yeah, there were audio games made for everyone, not just blind people, but marketed to everyone. They had like superstar power behind them. I mean, you had Sean Bean in Papa Sangre 2. You know, from Lord of the Rings. And I remember just thinking, this is mind-blowing. I'm sitting here hearing Sean Bean telling me what to do in this game. And it's 3D sound, and you can turn, and it turns with you around your head as you turn with your phone. And wow. You know, but what kills it is App Store economics makes it hard. It's not like you can just leave an app in the App Store and rake in the bucks. You have to maintain that app over time. And there are costs involved in even just leaving it there. Like there's a fee, a regular fee for having an app in the store. So, you know, unless you're making more on sales, you're losing money with that app still in the store. So eventually they get pulled. And we've lost a lot of really good games over the years because of that. And then there are changes like Apple's move to get rid of gambling games. You know, that cost us a couple of really brilliant games. So my advice to everyone in the gaming sphere, if you find something you like, enjoy it while it's there. You know, don't think it'll always be there for sure. Take the time to play it. I wish I spent more time with some of these games that have disappeared. You know, and more are coming, and more possibilities are happening. There's a lot of potential that hasn't been explored yet for board games, for RPGs, for audio games. And I think we're going to see a lot of that explored, you know.
I hope so. There's a lot of games built on engines, aren't there? Things like Unity Engine and things like that, or maybe where there's a perception that that's the barrier.
And it has been for a long time. Thankfully, things have happened in the Unity case that should lead to a lot more accessible games using that engine going forward. But it was a huge barrier because developers would pick these engines that made their task of developing a game easier, but left anyone needing accessibility out of the picture, even when, you know, all things being equal, we could have been in that picture in a lot of cases. So that was a frustration of mine for a long time. And it's kind of starting to go away now. I think more awareness is spreading. Things are, I think, getting better. And now that Apple has introduced some more economic choices for developers, I think we will see less disappearances and more stability in the gaming part of this. So I have a lot of hope going forward. There are a lot of good things happening there.
Here's hoping. And what about the productivity space then? Because you've mentioned that this is essentially your main device now. So you wrote this book on iOS, did you?
Yeah, I that was part of what I wanted to do. I wanted to do the whole thing on an iOS device, and that did make it harder in some cases. The spell check has been broken for quite a while, and that is frustrating. I've tried.
Is this in Pages or Word?
I used Ulysses. That's okay. my favorite writing app. And when I started looking around for those, Pages was a lot more clunky and hard and not as welcoming, not as accessible. So I needed an alternative, and thankfully Ulysses was there, and it worked for most of the time I was working on the guide. It was flawless, but there were a few patches where they'd have bugs and you'd have it slow to a crawl. You know, anyone using VoiceOver would have this thing slow to uselessness. So I had to then jump ship and go to Scrivener for a bit. And that was frustrating. Scrivener is not bad, but I just don't like moving things between apps as I'm working.
No.
And then they fixed that in Ulysses, and then iOS 13 comes and breaks the spell check. So now I have this 250,000 word document I can't properly check for errors, and it was just agonizing. I was having VoiceStream Reader read me my own text that I'd heard of tons of times, trying to pick out errors that I could then move to in Ulysses and correct. And it was just a nightmare. So, and then I use Pages at the end to generate the table of contents that is in the EPUB. If you get the EPUB version, I recommend that, because then you have a generated table of contents that will take you to the different links, the different sections. And it also has, of course, the headings and everything. So it's very nice, easy to navigate. And so that thankfully worked out pretty well. But it was a lot harder than I could have just done it on my laptop and had a lot more hair at the end of the process, but I wanted to see, could it be done? Could I write a whole book on my iPhone with my keyboard and nothing else? And I did. So that I was very happy to let loose. So. Yeah, it's possible. And there's lots of productivity apps out there. Nothing revolutionary. I mean, that's a word processor. I mean, you have a calculator, you have a spreadsheet, you have all the different things. Of course, Apple has their versions that are free for everyone now. So that's a whole Office package right there for no cost. Or you can find alternatives like I did. There are lots of alternative apps for these things. Nothing's really revolutionary.
The same communication, isn't it? We've got things like, I know we're primarily at work now, we're primarily on Windows devices, and we're all in a Microsoft, but I can pick up Microsoft Teams, I can pick up Skype, I can do all that from the iPhone.
Yeah, and the real power when it comes to productivity, when you're doing work or you're doing things, is how everything is just right there on the one device, and you can connect it all. So if I'm in a meeting and I'm talking with people and I want to check email at the same time, I could do that. If I wanted to, use Google to find out something that I could then bring back to the conversation, I could do that too. There's all sorts of these little ways that the power is not so much in the revolutionary nature of the apps that are there. It's all of them working together, and you can just have all those tools in your pocket, in your hand, that you can just use very easily, very fluidly. And get things done no matter where you are. That's really where the productivity side of it comes from. I do cooking as an example in the kitchen, and kind of talk about how, with one of these iPhones, you can have the recipes right there. Some of them have timers built in, so you can just tap on, where you want a timer to start, and it'll just start going, and you just do that step and then keep reading, right? I mean, it's all sorts of little things like that. different apps to make cooking in the kitchen, curating a collection of recipes, having the books, Netflix documentaries. You can watch these documentaries, and some of them let you run in the background. You can just take notes in another app as you're hearing, what's being said. And of course, a lot of them now are described, so you have that going for you too. And mm-hmm. all of a sudden, you have a wonderful way of learning about a lot of different topics. So there's immense power in terms of education, in terms of productivity, in terms of fun and communications, and just listening, appreciating music, appreciating consuming, Netflix. All these streaming services, are built with accessibility in mind. So, we can jump in there too, and keep up with what our friends are watching. I mean, it's wonderful at leveling the playing field. I really hope a lot of students kind of take this road, because, sighted people can see this strange gadget that you as a blind person are the only person in a city that might have. And they have no idea what it's doing, and they can't see it, so it's less interesting. Or you could have an iPhone that, I have an iPhone too. What do you do with yours? Like, you can build connections that way. You can use some of the same apps. Not all the apps are going to be as exciting. Certainly in the games department, there are way more exciting games for sighted people in a lot of cases. But they can use some of the games for us. And so there again is a possibility of something shared. And then going farther, something like role-playing games. I can take my iOS device. I can get a book like The Call of Cthulhu, which is Chaosium does those. I can understand, read the book. It's accessible. It's all laid out with headings and everything. You can navigate it easily, read the rules, and then join a role-playing game group and know what you're doing. Have some idea of the rules of these games. So there's a lot of outside-the-box things that it can help you join in different fun, join in, with your friends in a lot of different ways, especially now that everyone's home and doing everything online.
Yes.
That's one of the reasons I rushed this out. I could have sat there polishing it until doomsday. it really was at that point where, I knew I could have just waited for iOS 14 and hoped that everything was solved. But I realized, this is at this moment in time, someone might have an iPhone and might really be struggling to try and learn. If they learned enough, maybe they could use it to improve, to cope better with the situation we're all in now. Yeah. To let sighted people help them at a distance through the camera and apps like Be My Eyes and Aira, live through this a lot more safely and not endanger other people accidentally. Using Blind Square. If I go out for a walk, I'll use the Blind Square app. I have landmarks put in with all the stuff around the path, around the lake that I can walk right near my building. It's a small man-made lake. You can't swim in it. It's not paradise. This is just the middle of a city. but I can do that, and it will warn me ahead of time that I'm coming up to a bench. I'm coming up to gates, I don't have to touch those gates, those benches. I can just keep going past them and use my cane, to complete that navigational ability. And just keep my distance from things. So it's a lot safer than it otherwise might have been to go for a walk, especially now that I have hearing aids. And, I can't judge direction and distance quite as well as once I could. So it's a lot of capabilities there that are really useful in this situation like now.
How long did the book take you then? You're speaking that you could have written it forever. So how long was it?
It kept changing. I started this in 2016, in the fall of 2016. And I released it on April 20. God, I've already forgotten. It very recently, 24th, I think. Yeah. What was it, Sarah? 27th. There we are. 27th. Yeah. 25th. Wait a minute. It was a couple days early that I released. I was going to do it on the 29th. I did it on the 27th. Sarah's right. My better half, as she usually is. So yeah, you lose track of time after a while. I mean, you keep writing on this, and things kept changing. There'd be a change to iOS, and all of a sudden, 20,000 words would have to change because this, invalidated six different things, or an app would disappear, and I'd have to find another app to sort of replace it. Stuff kept shifting, and that is one core truth of if you're going to belong to the iOS ecosystem, have a backup plan. for anything you need to do, because stuff changes. And there might be periods where something doesn't work as well, or an app might disappear, have to be pulled off due to economics. So have backup plans. Look for those alternate apps that you can use to keep doing what you're doing. Most developers are going to warn you first. So it's not like you'll suddenly find an app that you have doesn't work. It's more like it just will no longer be in the app store, no longer be widely available. So you don't have to panic. Just have alternatives ready, just in case. And that's kind of the strategy I've taken up over time.
Does things like then, we're coming up to probably, I think, about the end of June, we'll have WWDC. I think it's late June this year. Apple will announce iOS 14, which will come out probably September.
Yeah,
does that make you nervous? Do you kind of think, oh God, do I need to update this thing again? How much is it going to?
You know, this kind of it puts me ahead of the game a bit. I didn't think I'd quite have this long of a window where my guide would be sort of not obsolete yet. Not everything is going to. People shouldn't think that things change so much that what you learn in one operating system
not
just doesn't
all,
apply.
No.
You know, it's a slow iterative process. So all the stuff that is in my guide is going to serve you well, you know, into the future for quite a few iOSers. You know, slowly changes are going to happen. Methods are going to slowly shift and improve, but the core has stood up remarkably well over time. VoiceOver, you know, there's still gestures that I use on the very first day I got my very first iPhone, you know. So the core of it is the same. It's just being built upon. So people should keep that in mind, you know. And really what I want to do in this guide is it's more about the sense of possibilities, to really give people a sense of what you can do and where it might be found. And it's made for people who aren't in a hurry. You know, this is not a manual. Manuals are great for looking up things you need to know now.
Yeah.
You know, the guide, this is a meanderer's guide. This is for people who want to take their time and really understand why this might be a good device, might be a good ecosystem, a place to go, a place to explore, right? That's it's for the more leisurely learning style.
And a reference guide as well.
Yeah, and it's a lot about, it's showing how, you know, the tech, this technology, how it benefits life. It gives you reasons. This is what you can do if you master this, so that you're never kind of just, you know, gulping down instructions and methods, you know, and not understanding, you know, what you can do with it, you know, why you're bothering to learn all this stuff, right? I don't ever want anyone to be in that position for long. I mean, there are points like learning VoiceOver where you really have to understand the gestures. So I kind of go through that section. It's a fairly lengthy one, but hopefully you're never going to be in a spot where you don't understand why. I always try to give examples. I always try to show this is why you want to learn this, or you might want to learn this, so that people understand, you know, what they're building. They have to see, you know, what the top of the mountain is like. You know, they have to have some understanding of why to climb it, you know, why it's worth climbing. But yeah, you know, it's been quite a journey, you know, doing this guide. And it's certainly, I had no idea I was going to spend 3.5 years on it. None whatsoever. You know, it's five times as big as the first guide. I did one for Windows a while ago called Personal Power. And it sort of took Windows computers and just showed you from a personal point of view what you can do. And that's important for Personal Power, the iOS edition. This is from a non-employment perspective. This is from what can I do in my personal life to enrich, you know, my personal life with this technology that's unconnected to job, that's not because I have to do this to pay. You know, we're sold a lot of this technology as blind people, and we're given this, this is how you can get work done, right? And that's how we're sort of, plunk, here, have a computer. This is how you can do work with it. And, you know, for sighted people, it's not like that. Sighted people get these machines, and it's like, this is all the fun stuff you can do with it. Mm-hmm. And by the way, it can also do work. And it's like getting a book in high school that you have to read, and you're forced to find symbols and things like figure out why this flower was used on this gravestone in particular and what's symbolic about that. And he's like, that just wrecks the book. You have to do too much of that, and you're not going to enjoy any book. I'm sorry. This is not happening, right? So you resent reading, and you don't read for pleasure because you've had too many horrid experiences you know, being taught how to do this thing that you never have to in regular life, that, you know, that is somehow worth learning, and it wrecks books. And it's the same can happen for blind people in technology. This is a computer, it can be used for work, and you don't have a job, so then you don't have motivation to practice what you've learned, so you forget it. And that's what happened with a lot of people I met who had Windows computers. And then again, it's kind of the same thing in, you know, with these iOS devices. It's, you know, no one was taught. There's no tutorial for voiceover built into these things. And there ought to be, because for blind people, it's not an intuitive grasp from day one. You know, you have to know enough about voiceover to use books in order to use the Books app to then read the manual that you can get for your device. It's a catch-22 for us, because no salesman is going to tell you enough about how to use voiceover so that you can then go on and have a really good experience. You're going to have a horrible experience because you don't know enough about how to use voiceover from the word go. And that's a big thing about what I wanted to get over in this guide, is get people over that hump. Make sure that the information was there. Make sure that it was free. So that wasn't a barrier either, that it had to be out there for free for people. And in as many accessible formats as I could make it, I couldn't do a lot of that. I did, it's up there in about 4 different formats. And it looks like other groups are going to take it and maybe turn it into other Daisy and Braille. So I'm hopeful that'll come to pass. Then it would be even easier for people to come out from a beginning stance of not knowing, just getting one of these devices, not knowing a thing about it, and being able to get to the point where they can connect and start, you know, learning about things for themselves.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I think, Michael, it's clear from the guide itself how hard you worked on it, and it's clear from speaking to you how enthusiastic you are about these devices and everything they can do. Where can people get it then? I know it's available on AppleBiz, but it's available in various places, I believe.
It's also available at my blog, michaelfair.blogspot.ca. And so you can get it there. Fair is F as in Frank, E-I-R. And F as in Frank, E-I-R. And so that's, Michael Fair at blogspot.ca. And of course, from the AppleVis site, you'll find a link to that page where the guide's available.
Yep.
And so that...
And we'll put links into these in the notes for the podcast, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. And then people can get that. And I would recommend the EPUB version in most cases, because it has the headings and the table of contents and everything. I've heard a couple people now saying that the RTF version works well for them too, so that's good. It was a bit problematic at first, but I've seemed to have nailed that one. So it's out there in a few different things. People are using the Word format to print parts of it in hard copy Braille, apparently. So that can work. I didn't expect that, but it can. So it's spreading faster than I thought it would.
That's fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah, it's
really. And are you on Twitter or anything like that, where people get in touch?
You can reach me by email, michael.fair@gmail.com. That's F as in Frank, E-I-R. You can also get me on Twitter. I'm at mfair. One way that I'm very partial to Twitter, so I should get back to you relatively quickly on Twitter. That people can contact me either way works well.
Great stuff. So thanks so much, Michael, for joining me today. It's a great piece of work, and I've no doubt it's going to be of great use to a lot of people. And I absolutely have to say, reiterate, I love your enthusiasm for it all as well. So thanks so much.
Well, thanks a bunch. It's been a pleasure.
Great stuff. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the AppleVis Extra. To learn more about us, visit our website at www.applevis.com. Follow us on Twitter @AppleVis and like us on Facebook.